Or how about this completely exquisite moment? Breathtaking. Finally, we hit the recapitulation. It's a grand and glorious reunion, timpani and all. Once the recapitulation is over, it's time for the cadenza. This is an opportunity for our soloists to express themselves in any way they like for as long as they like. The soloist can improvise a cadenza, write one out, have someone write one for them, or play an established cadenza by a well-known composer. Beethoven was not a professional violinist and sadly left us no cadenza for the violin concerto. However, many composers and great violinists have written cadenzas for the work, the most notable among them, Fritz Kreisler. But you might also find cadenzas by Leopold Auer, Josef Joachim, and Jascha Heifetz. The cadenza is always introduced by a special cadenza chord. It sounds like this. The cadenza on our recording is indeed by Fritz Kreisler, and there is a spectacular moment in it where we have the violin playing two themes at the same time. Here's another stunning example. The violin is playing both the beautiful cadence scale going up and theme 2 at the same time. One violin, it sounds like two people. Once the cadenza is over, Beethoven has one more transcendent moment for us. The cadenza ends with a trill, and we have theme 2 with just pizzicato strings. It's enough to bring tears to your eyes. At least it always does mine. I realize this is a lot to digest, but this first movement of the Beethoven Violin Concerto is almost 25 minutes long. Here, if I may, are all the themes laid out that you will need. First, the timpani drum tap rhythm. Then, theme 1. Then, theme 2. Then, the cadence material. If you can parse these, then you'll be a woman, my daughter. Movement 2 is a theme and variations, with a few Beethovenian wrinkles thrown in to make sure we don't fall asleep, something that never happens at concerts. The movement is in G major and, amazingly enough, never leaves its home key. The well-known musical annotator Donald Tovey referred to it as a movement of sublime inaction. Theme and variations is a challenging form to write in because if you stay too close to the theme, the variations are boring, and if you go too far away, we lose interest. It's a classic case of having your cake and eating it too. Here is the theme. Note it has all these long pauses which can be filled with violin decoration. Here's variation 1 with a theme played by horns, clarinets, and violin. Variation 3 is fascinating because it's for orchestra without the solo violin. The final variation is for solo violin and very quiet pizzicato strings in the orchestra. By the end of the movement, we have reached such a level of quiet that things are almost inaudible. One of Beethoven's very modern ideas is to join the slow second movement with his third movement, Rondo. This idea will be worked out fully in the Fifth Symphony of 1808, 2 years later, but for now, a simple transition seemed to content him. The third movement contains the virtuosity that has been missing from this concerto thus far. Beethoven gives us a rollicking country fiddle tune John Denver would be proud of. Down home village fun. As mentioned earlier, this movement is a rondo, and rondos are based upon the concept of departure and return. The theme we just heard will return 3 times, and each time we are glad to hear it. It's most often diagrammed as A, B, A, C, A. A is the main theme we've just heard. Here's B. Do you like the hunting horns? I do. By the way, unlike Mozart, who rode well, Beethoven was a terrible rider. I think all of this village hunting stuff is wishful thinking. Here is Wistful Theme C. So after this extensive journey through Beethoven's violin concerto, what's so great about it? The short answer would be plenty. Here's the long one. 1. There's no other concerto like it, either by Beethoven or anyone else. The dominance of lyricism over virtuosity creates something unique. 2. The customary roles of violin and orchestra are reversed. Usually, the violin has all the fire and the orchestra provides background. In this concerto, the violin is the ruminating philosopher and the orchestra the agent of instability and change. 3. Without using superfluous notes, Beethoven has produced a work of singular beauty which taxes the soloist. In addition to having a beautiful sound and spot-on intonation, you also need a brain to play this piece. It's not something you can or should try to fake your way through. You have to have a plan. 4. For many violinists, it's the greatest concerto ever written. Postscript. Beethoven's Violin Concerto was premiered by Franz Clement and the orchestra of the Theater an der Wien on December 23, 1806, in a benefit performance for the soloist. Beethoven was unable to complete the piece until a couple of days before the performance. Clement, and probably the orchestra, were woefully under-rehearsed. The piece was not well received by the audience, who were probably confused by the work's heavenly length, strange harmonic journey, and less-than-stellar performance. Here is Beethoven's companion Anton Schindler on the matter. And this is what he said. He said, "The concerto enjoyed no great success. When it was repeated the following year, it was more favorably received. But Beethoven decided to rewrite it as a piano concerto. As such, however, it was totally ignored. Violinists and pianists alike rejected the work as unrewarding, a fate it has shared with almost all of Beethoven's works until the present time. The violinists even complained that it was unplayable, for they shrank from the frequent use of the upper positions." Fast forward to May 27, 1844. A 12-year-old violinist, Joseph Joachim, makes his debut with the London Philharmonic Society, conducted by Felix Mendelssohn. His amazing performance of the Beethoven Concerto, complete with cadenzas of his own composition, establishes the piece as a great masterwork, and it has been thought so ever since. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polewski, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Ludwig van Beethoven's Violin Concerto.